I want to begin today by thanking Tanya for her courageous and challenging sermon. Last week, as she preached the first of our two sermons during Black History Month, I hope you found great meaning in her words about building bridges to one another for the hope of true reconciliation and healing in our world when it comes to race. Never an easy thing to talk about, is it? We'll talk about it, Tanya did. Preach about it, Tanya did. And I know based on the feedback that I've received this week, she helped open up a conversation that should be beginning to happen in predominantly white churches like this one. It was a tough sermon for her to preach. I know that. I know it was a tough sermon for her to preach. It was a tough and an honest sermon for some of us to hear. But it was a necessary sermon delivered by the right person as a gateway to a better future where true and authentic bridge building can happen. So I just want to say thank you, Tanya, for your brave message. Wonderful. And now you get to hear from a white guy. So last year, if you remember back, I did four sermons for Black History Month, focusing on four pivotal figures throughout history and their vision of God. Like, who was God for these people? We journeyed into the lives of Maya Angelou, and Rosa Parks, and Harriet Tubman, and of course, Jackie Robinson. That was fun, I have to admit. For us today, though, when I started thinking of a service around Black History Month, it's music that struck me more than anything else. And the choir had already picked out some pretty awesome spiritual music. And that got me thinking. So today, music will be the central topic. But I'm not talking about my loves today. I'm not going to talk about Duke Ellington, whom I love, or Billie Holiday, or my two all-time favorite mind-altering jazz artists, and Miles Davis and John Coltrane. Sorry, Ellery. Blue Train and Kind of Blue, two of the best albums ever made. We can debate about that, I'm sure. Neither am I talking about the soul-stirring music of Sam Cooke or Otis Redding Jr. or Aretha Franklin. Who here has heard the Blind Boys of Alabama? One of the best. I love them all. Instead, what I'm talking about today is music that moves us quite often right here within these walls in our worship services. Music that we often find ourselves singing by heart or humming later in the day or even crying and invoking tears when we hear it. I'm talking about music that a great deal of it is anonymous because it was not composed in a traditional manner that oftentimes music is in the studio or at a piano or in a coffee shop or a bar. Some of the best music was composed in bars. Did you know that? Mick Jagger wrote "I Can't Get No Satisfaction" down at the Fort Harrison. You believe that? That's crazy. This music began as yearnings from years of sweat and pain and toil in hot fields or in tiny shacks at night and in long lines along the roads as pickaxes were swung or in the cotton fields of a hot southern day. This music evolved in the midst of great oppression and evil, being nothing short of moments of hope in a world that tried to tell those singing their songs that there was no such thing, nor were they even entitled to it. This music was often criminal. It was criminal music because in many places it was illegal to sing it, because to sing these songs meant to sing of freedom for those for which freedom was only a distant dream. The music I'm talking about today are what we call spirituals, African-American spirituals, songs that arose from the evil and the tyranny of the context of the scourge on this great nation, slavery. Now, to me, these are the most important songs. They really are. Hands down, the most important songs we'll ever sing. They're both at the same time authentically American, and they're authentically African-American at the same time. They are woven into the fabric of American history in profound ways. Yet, my fear is, it's part of the impetus for this sermon, when we sing them, especially in white congregations, that The context gets lost. It's easy to lose the context. And we kind of can get to the point where we miss the essence of what they were trying to get at. And these are works of freedom in which context and essence are vital to not only understanding them and their origins, but also in letting them be vehicles of healing, which they can be in our nation and world today. They are as spiritual as anything can be. We should note right away that spirituals are woven into American history more than, as I said, any other musical movement, and stand as America's first musical movement to come out of this country. Have you ever thought about that? To quote one scholar of spirituals, "European classics, Anglo ballads, hymns, and Irish jigs dominated American music for centuries. That all changed in the fields as slaves created songs of sorrow and hope to sustain them in the midst of the horrors and injustice of slavery. These songs were created and transformed through the experiences of 200 years of the institution of slavery and honed after the Civil War when slavery still raised its ugly head in other ways." Well, these songs were sung for the purpose of affirming humanity, an idea that was drummed into all slaves as something that they did not possess. These songs were sung to affirm hope, the will to go on living when life just seemed nothing but endless toil and violence and chaos and punishment and deprivation. But though reading was forbidden for all slaves generally as a rule, listening was not. Listening was not. So surely they heard hymns being sung in churches. Surely they heard texts like ours today of slaves in Egypt and the story of injustice and God's liberation strangely being read from these great big pulpits, often by powerful white slave owners. And they heard about this God through scriptures like ours today, this strange God, who heard not the prayers of the rich and the powerful, but the cry of the oppressed. And they heard about how this God delivered them to freedom. They heard about Moses leading the Israelites on a journey to freedom. They heard about God hearing the cry of the poor in a distant land, and about this God's broken heart in the midst of the oppression, about God asking, "Is there no balm? Is there no balm in Gilead?" And lamenting that the people's health, their wholeness, had not yet been restored. And surely they heard over time about these great figures who experienced liberation. Like, how about David? Or they were liberators, like David or Samson or Joshua, Moses, and of course this guy named Jesus. And no doubt they wondered, how long? How long until our liberation? How long would oppression be allowed to triumph? And from these stories and these real life experiences of slavery came the spiritual's driving force, a strong belief in the inevitability of God's redemption in their lives and in the world. These are powerful songs of hope and liberation and redemption, sang through the lens of a powerful and trusting faith. But that's not what fascinates me today. There's so much more to these songs. I don't know how many of you know this, but we should also note that the spirituals are kind of multi-layered, evolving quickly to contain a practical component to them over time as they were sung. Others than only expressions of redemption or faith. There's considerable evidence that the spirituals were used as secret codes of communication. This is why at various times in history, it was literally a criminal act for slaves to sing, because they were communicating very important information. Take the spiritual, "Follow the Drinking Gourd." The choir just wonderfully sang for us. This song is thought to have been kind of a map for escaped slaves to follow, to lead them out of slave territory. It is widely believed that the Drinking Gourd, you can see it in the picture up there, painting up there, refers to the Big Dipper, the pointer to the North Star, the pointer to the North, the pointer to freedom. Listen to the words. "When the sun comes back, I'd sing it for you, but I don't want to do that to you. I'm not having an Obama moment here. I'm going to start singing Amazing Grace. It ain't going to happen. When the sun comes back and the first quail calls, follow the drinking gourd. For the old man is waiting for to carry you to freedom. If you follow the drinking gourd, the riverbank will make a very good road, and the dead trees will show you the way. Left foot, peg foot, traveling on, follow the drinking gourd. Nothing short of a song written about escaping to freedom. The words are coded language. Or take another that we sing here all the time, generally at communion. Let us break bread together. You all know the words, right? Sing the first verse with me. Come on, let's all sing it in unison. Let us break bread together on Let us break bread together on me. When I fall on my knees with my face to the rising sun, oh Lord, have mercy on me. Well done. Well done. We sing this as a communion hymn, but in actuality, it was a coded call for a secret meeting. A gathering will be held in the morning, likely at sunrise, with the words, with my face to the rising sun. That's what it indicates. When I fall on my knees with my face to the rising sun. The meetings at sunrise could have been to plan an escape, could have been to discuss issues of concern, could have been to pass on news, or simply to gather and pray. But definitely in the morning, with my face to the rising sun, we meet in the morning. Hidden language, brilliant, brilliant. One of the most powerful spirituals is steal away. A song that means not only to steal away to Jesus, but also serves as an instruction on when to run away, when to escape. The lines in the hymn are again coded. My God calls me, he calls me by the thunder, or he calls me when the green trees are abandoned, or during the lightning. Each reference to escaping likely to an underground railroad, either during the next storm, or even a code for in the spring, in the summer when the trees are leafy green and are bending in the winds again, or catching the winds. Something, freedom, perhaps was in the air, and that song allowed for it to be communicated wide and far. The refrain of that song is what gets me. I ain't got long to stay here. I ain't got long to stay here. Surely freedom was at hand, and it was being communicated. Finally, one more. One of the most amazing of the spirituals to me is Wade in the Water. The favorite. This song is a song of instruction that teaches more than anything else that when you've escaped, when you've followed that drinking gourd and you're on your way north, don't hug the shoreline. Don't hug the shoreline. Don't just walk along the streams, but wade in the water. Get in the water. Go where there's nothing to trace you. No footprint, no scent. Wade in the water. Wade in the water. Children, wade in the water. God's a going to trouble the water. In the Gospel of John, we heard Peter read for us, the pool at Bethesda was a place that the angels touched. It was known for healing. John's point then is, it's quite clear. Angels would trouble the water, and whoever entered would be healed, made whole, and freed of whatever ailed you. The spiritual then is clear as well. Get to the water, children. That is where the path of healing and freedom truly begins. Get to the water. You could go on with these all day long, but you want to eat hamburgers. I know that. There's such power to these hymns, isn't there? These songs. I've only scratched the surface here today. Sometimes I'd like to maybe bring in like a spiritual expert to talk about the power of these songs, someone that's really studied them all their lives. But for us today, especially as we look to begin our journey into Lent this week, a time that encourages us to reflect honestly on human brokenness and sin, personal and systemic, a time for seeking for forgiveness and offering forgiveness, these hymns are wholly appropriate for us to explore honestly, because in one way or another, we're all connected to these hymns. One way or another, we're all connected to these spiritual hymns. And Black History Month, in conjunction with the coming season of Lent, offers us a time to explore that connection in light of honest confession, which we need, forgiveness, and reconciliation that is so needed when it comes to slavery and its place in American history. Like, don't talk about it, just bury it and hope we can all move on. We can't do that. There is, in other words, a balm in Gilead that can indeed cure the sin-sick soul of a nation even, if we will enter the journey honestly. And these hymns can help us do just that. The great Frederick Douglass once said in a speech in 1852, deploring the celebration of the 4th of July, he's deploring it, an Independence Day while slavery was still an institution, he said these words, "America is false to the past, false to the present, and solemnly binds herself to be false to the future." He closed his speech with these words, "Go, search where you will, roam through all the monarchies and despotisms of the old world, travel through South America, search out every abuse, and when you have found the last, lay your facts by the side of the everyday practices of this nation, and you will say with me that for revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without a rival." Douglass's words from 1852 speak to the context that the spirituals came out of. They are real and they are raw. So my one hope is by developing an understanding of the nature of the spiritual as a movement of freedom and redemption that we can always keep in mind the context that Douglass spoke from fresh, so that we not only never forget the injustice rained on millions of people with slavery, but actually work towards making amends for the ills of that institution, ills that are still alive and have just kind of gone to different forms today as we watch injustices against Black lives and communities in terms of what? Increased police violence? Still seeing it. Racial profiling? Stop and frisk? Boy, that's come back, hasn't it? At least in the election. Stripped voting rights? How about down here in Florida? Big issue down here. Or stacked political districts that are keeping the pain of the past alive and present today. Simply singing the spirituals, especially, I'm going to contend, in often predominantly white congregations, is not enough to begin to heal the wounds. It's just not. In fact, it can lead to the very falsity that Douglass was speaking about. But knowing the context, feeling the pain, empathizing with the yearn for wholeness that are the essence of the spiritual, well, this can be one path of true and honest reconciliation. And as Tenya called us to last week, bridge building. We need to sing one. That's what we need to do. We need to sing one. So why don't we stay seated, close out this sermon, and just as you think about these words, think about their context as you sing, "There is a balm in Gilead." Number 553 in your hymnals.